House Committee on the Judiciary, Tuesday, June 19th, 2001, 1:30 p.m., hearing room 357.
Everybody, glad you're here. Wish we weren't. We are not today. We're going to hold it over until some additional discussions take place on Senate Bill 384. It is clearly the cursed bill of the session, because I think this has got to be at least the seventh time the committee has taken this bill up, and we're not quite ready to move yet. We are, however, going to go to an Alaska committee for agreement on suspension of the rules. Is there any objection to suspension of the rules for possible reconsideration of Senate Bill 914? Hearing none, the rules are suspended. The chair would move that we reconsider the vote by which we pass Senate Bill 914A to the floor. Is there any objection? Hearing none, Senate Bill 914A is in front of us. Council, tell us about
the Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this bill comes to the Senate Jacket. Do you have the eight amendments in front of you, which are conflict amendments? They make this bill, which puts money into the drug program and forfeitures, compatible with the two other bills that we passed out of here some time ago. House Bill 2429, which is civil forfeiture, and House Bill 3642, which is criminal forfeiture.
So as I understand it, colleagues, the candidates are exactly the same bill that we passed out before, except for the resolution of conflicts that have to be fixed to make it aligned with both the civil and the criminal forfeiture bill. Is there any discussion on the eight amendments? Is there anybody in the audience who wants to address anything in the eight amendments? Okay, seeing none, we're in work session. The chair would move the dash eight amendments to Senate Bill 914. Is there any discussion on my motion? Is there any objection?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to give a courtesy vote to move this out. I have received an email from a constituent, a lawyer in my community, who's jumping up and down about one of the bills that we've done in the last 2 days, and I can't remember which one it is. And just in case it's this one, I'm going to put you on notice. I mean, go sideways on the floor. I don't know. What
very well. We won't ask you to carry this.
Thank you.
Who was assigned to carry it?
I was. Representative Lowe was, and I'll carry it.
Well, then you're not going to national representative. We'll let Representative Nikki Walker carry it, assuming
hey, at least I was all open.
The amendments passed. Are there any objections or any fees? Hearing none, the amendments are in. The chair would move the amended version to Senate Bill 914 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Also creates a chance that all
excused. Senate Bill 914 moves as amended with the conflict of the floor and will change the carry to Representative Nikki Walker. Please stay tuned for those of you who came to watch the Senate Bill 384 show. We will post its next appearance as soon as we know. My guess is that will be probably within the next 24 hours. So be advised. We are adjourned.
The present news, I believe, was 1979. And then it went for 35 years. So, you know, and I'm well aware that we can't pass a law that's going to get a contract in terms of, but I would think in terms of these entities, in terms of, I mean, Metro's own webpage, you look at directions to the zoo or how to get to the zoo, and it's all directions how to drive there. And then, you know, at the bottom of the page, you know, there's only on big light rail. And I think in terms of it, I think some of this is attitude as well in terms of, I'm well aware that you need parking spaces. You have customers and you have turnover in the day. It seems to me that reasonable people can go out and say, we can find some method to accommodate what is a real concern in terms of the taxpayers of this state have invested in this project. I was on, like I said, the city council in Hillsborough, and the choices that were made for the decision and how it was built
didn't affect up here, it affected out here. So I don't have things in my district to support closer into Portland. And I think it's, that's my concern here. That we start, you know, saying, well, this is going to be a special thing, and, you know, we're not going to figure out how, you know, these people here. So we're going to get a lot of short trips into Portland in terms of which is, you know, we're trying to avoid that and try to accommodate that. Maybe the answer is shuttle from private.
That's the answer. That is the answer.
You know, but I think in terms of takes everything, but if you're continually going to say no, and that there's no answer, there's no reasonableness to sit and negotiate, I think that's why we're sitting here today, is because of that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hill, I can obviously sense your frustration on this matter, which maybe is shared on this side of the table. The question is, who are we responding to? Are people in the immediate Arlington neighborhood and in the Highland-Sylvan area, or are we really talking about people in the region? I don't know if the folks from Hillsborough came to you and said, I want to be able to park at the zoo transit station, or whether it's people in the immediate neighborhood. I think the frustration you must feel is the same frustration that I have about the system altogether, as I mentioned to you, and that is inadequate park and rides all throughout the system, including the Sunrise Quarter and those sort of things. The other thing to remember is, as far as investments, is the people of the region have invested in that zoo. We recently, the zoo, the Forestry Center is a private entity to which there are private corporations making contributions to that. But in our case, the $35 million capital expansion in that facility is to really try to give people the sort of things that Tony was talking about for community activity to see what's in nature is really the primary purpose of that particular facility. As I mentioned to you when we started this, I was somebody who way back said, you know, I don't know if this fits the mode, but it's there and we should do it. Now, as far as compromise goes, the question then is who gets the permits? And if we want to make that available to everybody in the region, and they all get there before 7 o'clock in the morning to park to do their rides, they're going to be taking up space that later would be used for people who are trying to use the facility. So it's a conundrum for us. If we try to say, if you get there and it's full, you can't use it, most people commute early in the morning or late at night, and they're going to then be blocking people who are going to be coming up to the facility, the activities there, the evenings up there, or who are later going to come up in the day. So that's the problem we run into. Do you charge for those things? If you do, you do the market rate for the downtown parking costs, which are $30, $40 a day now. So there's some issues for that. And then how do you monitor that to make sure that people are not using the facility when we make those decisions? It's hard to sometimes tell. On a sunny day, all of a sudden, a lot of people will show up there that you may not account for. So there are some real issues there that we have talked to the community about. We've talked to TriMet about additional space. I think someone's going to testify to that, or not additional space, but additional transit services up there. I think that's the thing that needs to be discussed more, and we certainly be supportive of that.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
I think, like, in terms of, I mean, this notion of, you know, well, I'll be open to everybody, that's the recipe to kill it. In terms of, I mean, we make choices all the time in terms of keeping things regional and small, in terms of, I mean, so I don't think in terms of to sit there and use an argument that, oh, you know, the region, well, you know, the state paid for it, so therefore, you know, I can argue that, you know, I think, you know, we should all get there. We have federal dollars, and, you know, we can make that argument all day long in terms of who paid for it, but I think it's because we're talking here about regional issues. We make those choices, and we limit things. The city of Portland does permit parking in neighborhoods. They have a program that doesn't work. So I think in terms of, I guess, what I'm looking for is, why can't reasonable people go out, figure out, you know, a demonstration project, see if it works, if it's abject disaster, get rid of it. But in terms of, nobody's tried what I've heard, and, you know, and I don't think any of us are trying to look at, you know, taking, you know, 500 of those rides and turning them into park and ride. I think in terms of, is there a reasonable approach that we could go out and try this to see if it works? If it doesn't work, don't do it. I mean, I'm well aware of what your requirements are to operate. There's huge investment all around the region, in the state, in this area, in this country. You know, but how can we make this work?
I would just like to comment on the idea that the answer is no, we won't even talk, is a little unfair, I think, in that Mark Reed has pointed out that because of concerns, we did talk, and one of the compromises was the Vietnam Vet Memorial parking lot, less than a block away from the zoo parking lot, is available for nighttime use of light rail. Just a couple months ago, working with Jim Ivancy, the president of the Sylvan Neighborhood Association, we tried a pilot project where we would make the lot available on certain nights for people that wanted to see Blazer games. So we tried that. We're willing to talk and to try things. Yeah, this picture that's been painted of we've just said no and we're not willing to talk is a little unfair, I think. But the permit plan, I will tell you, is something we didn't try because we looked at the paper, we looked at what problems it was going to cause. We tried to work through those problems and couldn't even get past the point of let's take this to a on-the-ground test. The problems were such that we never got to that stage.
Somewhere you still have to draw a line. And the people on the far side of the line are still going to be mad. And the people on the near side of the line are going to be mad when they still can't park because we felt we needed the spaces. Ultimately, then, we end up being in a position where everyone is mad at us and that the costs to administer this are significant for us. And it's not related to our mission, but particularly for us as a nonprofit. This is not our mission to provide parking for the neighborhood. And I think that transit for the neighborhood, something that does work, and we would certainly be supportive of that.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to cut this off. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And I do have one quick question. Yes or no? Does this come from TriNet or from Metro or from the zoo? Who does this come from?
I think that's the Zoo Security provides that. Warning people if we're using light rail, and after I think three warnings.
You need to get near the microphone, please.
Provided by the Zoo Security, and after some number of warnings, I think it's three, then they start issuing
what's interesting is that, number one, I don't know how they know who they give them to. Number two, what I would find very irritating if I got one of those is that there's no place that says who has put that out, who owns it, nothing.
We should have
that could have been put by some kid trying to be a smart aleck.
But you're absolutely right. That's a good
issue. And if there's a question, who to call. Thank you. Thank you. Let's see. I need to have. I'm going to go to find my list. Bernie Bottomley, please. And Susan Schneider. And
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, at this time I'll jump right in. Bernie Bottomley from TriMet Government Affairs. We are also not the owner of the parking lot. I thought I'd just touch on a couple of quick things, sort of random thoughts. You have my testimony there, some of the high points. When we were originally looking at building the West Side Light Rail Line, the proposal was to put it on the surface, and with that alignment, we would have put a parking ride facility at West Sylvan. At least that was the thinking in the early stages of the project. Because of operational factors, but also very strong opposition from the neighborhoods along the canyon, we decided to put the rail in the tunnel. And that the expense of that required us to eliminate the West Sylvan station and the potential for a parking ride there. So just a little bit of history in terms of trade-offs that were made historically on the project. A couple of folks have mentioned the potential for better service or more extensive service in the neighborhood in the vicinity of the rail station. A couple of observations there. One, we are working with those neighborhoods. We've made a commitment to those neighborhoods to work with them over this summer to see whether there are ways that we can improve service there. It's not an easy area to serve. It's large lots, low density, winding roads, very few sidewalks. So it's a challenge for us, and I think Mr. Burton contention that there, you know, there's frustration on this side of the table as well. It's a difficult area to serve, but we're committed to working with the neighborhood on service issues. We have talked to them about potential for making improvements to the bus line that does serve that area and bringing it, it currently turns around at the zoo, bringing it up to West Sylvan and looping through the neighborhood. We've also talked to them about providing them a shuttle van at our expense, but that they would operate to either shuttle people to the zoo station or into downtown. It's, the neighborhoods have not been interested in pursuing that because of the responsibility that they would have to assume in terms of operating it. But we have offered to provide them with a free van. We are very concerned with the security issues at the zoo station, and very sensitive to any problem that is associated with the station or is around that area. We have contracted with the Portland Police and other police departments around the region to patrol our system and our station areas. And we do extensive patrols of the zoo station and the surface area. We've worked with the Portland Police on operations that they've done in the Forest Park and Washington Park area to address some of the transient camping issues there to try to improve the security of the park. And we're willing to look further at that with the neighborhoods, with the community policing program, but we aren't the police force for the general community, and we have limited resources in that regard. But we are very much interested in addressing those issues where they arise. Finally, with respect to the way that a neighborhood parking permit program or a general park and ride might function, I think in terms of the general park and ride, I don't hear that as a real option because of the impact on the zoo and the forestry center. Obviously, if you did a neighborhood permit, you would have less impact because you'd be taking up fewer spaces. But I think the critical issue there is how many spaces would you want and how would the permits be distributed first, and then secondly, how would the lot be operated so as not to conflict with the zoo and the other users there. Our experience, extensive experience in the region, is that where you have a lot of folks wanting to use a facility and not very many parking spaces, you get people going anyway. And we tow folks from the lot at the, not from the lot, but from the streets and the areas around the Sunset Transit Center now where people are parking illegally. The problem is that they don't know that the lot is full until they get there. And once they're there, it's very difficult for them to change where they're going to go. If they don't have parking spaces downtown, they don't really have the option of continuing their trip in the car. That problem would be, I think, even worse at the zoo, where you would probably, for commuters anyway, have folks arriving early in the morning to a designated set of spaces. Those spaces may be full. The rest of the parking lot is empty. And it would be, I think, a difficult thing for those permit holders to then not park there. I think it's just too attractive an option for them. And that does put somebody, the zoo or the forestry center or TriMet, in the undesirable position of having to ticket them or tow them. And we've done that on occasion where we have folks parking in front of fire hydrants and blocking access and so forth, but it is a very contentious issue, and the commuters are not happy about it. And I think it would be worse in this instance where you had folks who had a legitimate permit, thought they were parking at the right place, the right time.
I'm going to have to close the hearing, and we're going to have to adjourn the meeting because we are now under a call of the House. So, with that, I'm going to make a very brief comment about this bill. I do like the bill, and with all due respect, what I've heard is a lot of excuses this morning. What I would suggest is maybe a little more action. action with the local folks there. I can see where we're at here. It's 6:29 at 1:53 p.m. So with that, I'm going to close the hearing on House Bill 3540, and I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you.
Are we under a legislative mandate to make these findings of some sort?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Merkley,
Mr. Chairman, and supervisors, those are processes that are in our database. So, yes, they would be able to apply with the new regarding requirements. And then you got just a certain portion of the farm operators that will be able to qualify if they do some testing.
What does the statute actually ask of the legislature? Does it say the legislature will review this information and make a finding, or what are we actually like to do?
The statutory, Mr. Chair, Representative, the statutory reference refers to ODOT presenting the study to the legislature.
Senator Byer, with our scenario, you just have to think of what, if this is the processing equipment that's going to get the tax credit, so it's not any other machinery equipment that would have been used for farming, it's just the processing equipment. And then you have to look at what is the portion that they're processing on the site. Yes, they're processing, and they can meet, 50% of the total, and the livestock is raised, it's also processed, and that.
Have an impact on their payment. The only potential impact is that if they record fewer on-road miles, then maybe in the future there might be a reduction in flat fees. But it's difficult. And so the hard process is to make sure we're communicating what the form is, to make sure that they are getting information at as best as possible. We're working with them on that. The second piece is, after the form comes in, to make sure that the way we get back out to them and survey and have confirmed whether they were right or wrong on what they did on their form and whether this is actually the situation, that we do that in a little broader way. The challenge for us in the past has been flat fees are not a large revenue source, and there's been an emphasis on trying to do the minimal amount to get the job done without spending a lot of money on going through the evaluation of the process. And in the future, I think what we have to do is work a little closer with industry to make sure we're connecting on that survey process, and hopefully not so much so that we're increasing our administrative time, which the Transportation Committee is making sure that we're reducing, and at the same time dealing with ways and means about those administrative tasks, but that we want to make sure we're doing a survey process that industry would say, even though it may be somewhat short, that it is addressing what they were concerned about, and making sure we're getting the best possible data that we can. So it's two parts. One is the form and education around the form and the needs from industry. The second is the survey process about how we go out with industry, with their help on getting information so we can make a report to the legislation.
Just to make sure you're clear, this is just for, land that is especially assessed, so they have to receive that special system. Like a lot of large processes will be on industrial on land. That kind of thing does, you know, exclude a lot of the larger processors. And then, like I was saying, they have to meet the volume requirements. And they have to be, if they are specialists on specific land, that the only other way that they qualify for the
In the future, we may have to wrestle with that idea of how much actual auditing we have in order to make sure we have
Following on to much interest, Minister's proposed, I'm wondering what those operations have fallen in terms of ministry.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, there have been different contracts over time. I was working with the industry over time. However, there have been multitude of different survey approaches used in the 80s and 90s.
They started their processing on the other.
Trying to determine whether one element of forms and reporting or another. What we're trying to do for the next step is to make sure that the forms are clear, the can be, as I mentioned, with representatives, and that industry is
informing
about the survey process, and then some of the assumptions. And not to take too much time, but
not
you mentioned
that
the assumption earlier, which is how much of the time a large truck is total and how much is empty, so therefore how much time is actually having a significant impact on the roadway and how much it is when it's running in. Things such as that are important distinctions that are not really answered in the form process that we have now. We need to have data for that in order to have something other than a anecdotal information that might say 40% loaded, 50% loaded, whatever the amount.
And in this case, I'm sure they would qualify because they are very large drawers. I don't know that, that we don't already have enough limitations here.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Nelson, 1949 is actually my birthday, so I wasn't here then, but I think that in 49 it was brought forward as a way to deal with weight mile taxation and the fact that truckers who are doing off-road miles for the most part, it would make for an easier process of dealing with paperwork and reports. So my guess would be in 1949 the industry expressed a concern and wanted to shoot for a Class B alternative, but I don't know if that's first time.
I'm just trying to find out how.
Mr. Chair, Representative Nelson, I think the continuing public policy decision has been that due to the process of reporting weight mile tax, it is an appropriate thing to allow for the alternative for Class C. I think the decision point is as long as we can continue to work with industry and work to get the best possible incentive on the basis of Class B option users to operate course as accurately as possible, that that will be incentive to continue Class B. If we weren't able to get anything that made that correlation that said we just can't get the information, then that may be a kind of thing that Class B would not be appropriate. But we have every intent to work with the industry and try to get the process to work and to make sure we have the best data so that we can make that decision and show that it's approximately equal and move on.
Well, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Gary Thompson, and I represent the Oregon Wine Growers Association and was involved in the work group. I just want to make an introductory remark and then turn it over to Bernie and Jeff to give their testimony in support of House Bill 2033. A lot of work groups, in my opinion, don't produce very much. This was one that was quite the exception. The Department of Revenue did an excellent job facilitating the work group and producing some very useful information. Our local government partners came to the work group in a very constructive